What's going on, everybody? Mike Curlin here of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and I'm stoked to be collaborating with Rotoballer again in 2021, with the Bases Loaded Podcast continuing as part of the Rotoballer Radio Network. Since 2013, Rotoballer has been grinding away, providing millions of fantasy baseball fanatics their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, Rotoballer's 2021 MLB Draft Kit is live, and all Bases Loaded Podcast listeners can get 10% off Rotoballer's Draft Kit by using the discount code BASESLOADED. That's Bases Loaded, all one word. Rotoballer is home to number one Fantasy Pros accuracy ranker Nick Mariano. Nick's 2021 rankings and projections are available as part of the Rotoballer Draft Kit, along with printable cheat sheets, our top draft sleepers, more than 300 2021 player outlooks, and all of this fantasy baseball goodness from Rotoballer is available for 10% off with the discount code BASESLOADED. Just go to rotoballer.com/BASESLOADED and get your draft kit today.
The base is loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here! Second deck walk-off home run, grand slam!
Hello and welcome in, everyone, to episode 146 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Curland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Curland. And of course, I am joined by one of my awesome, most... I don't know. I got nothing to say about you, George. What's up, man? Welcome to the show, of course. You can follow him on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. You're just an awesome dude, man. That's all I got. I was trying to like build you up. I'm like, yeah, everyone knows we do this together. Everyone knows you're my co-host. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man? Yeah, it's nothing new. Just here.
Just talking baseball at least once
talking
a week.
Baseball.
And yeah, man. So what's new, man? I know things are kind of hectic right now. You got the new gig over at NFBC. You can call them drafting. NBC Sports Edge, right? Or something like that?
Yeah. NBC Sports Edge. Yeah. I mean, most people might know it as Roto World. It was rebranded. So now NBC Sports Edge. Just dropped my first article there. So yeah, exciting stuff.
You're big time now because you're behind a paywall.
that's still kind of weird to me, man. First time I post something that like is behind a paywall, and it's like it's just kind of weird.
Think about where we started, the FSGN. Like,
That's right.
They're still around. I mean, at least I found the Twitter's still around. I haven't honestly checked them out in a while, but man, I honestly didn't think we'd be here this fast. You know what I mean? All things considered, but look at us now, going on the year three. Can't talk
Absolutely,
about enough, but.
Man. Started 2 years ago and we've been grinding. So
started from the bottom, now we're here. That's a thing, right? That song's a little outdated, but it's okay because we're not here for the hip hop references. We're here for the baseball talk. Like that transition? I've been doing this a little bit. what we're gonna be talking about tonight, you probably know from the title, but early round starting pitchers, just some strategy talk as well. We're gonna talk about how we like to attack the early rounds in roto formats, points leagues, quality start leagues, even discuss a few of our guys that we like. And guys that we actually are fading. And then we'll have a little bit of fun. We're going to each give a player that's in the top 10 right now in ADP that we think could fall outside the top 25. And then we're going to reach for one player outside the top 25 in ADP and turn around and discuss why they could be a top 10 guy come season's end. And then we'll get to your Twitter questions and call it a night. I just ran through the outline so you know what to expect. And I guess that's pretty much it. But before we get started, yes, I know I'm being needy. If you can hit us with a 5-star rating and review, that'd be greatly appreciated. It goes a long way in helping us be seen on iTunes and all that, from my understanding. So again, 5-star rating and review, greatly appreciated. And other than that, let's jump right in. Let's talk right now, again, top of the show. Let's get right into strategy talk. I do think, and I've been told, strategy isn't discussed often enough, especially in the redraft side of things. You have a lot of smart dudes talking about it on the high stakes formats and all that. So let's get the people what they're asking for. They would like some more strategy talk. Overall, in the early rounds, let's start with what we play the most, Roto. What is your typical way of going about starting with starting pitchers in the early rounds?
Well, I mean, I guess a lot of it depends on your draft slot, right? But I definitely like going starting pitching early. Heavy early on. So that's maybe 2 starting pitchers in like my first 4 rounds. So, I know it's not conventional. You know, we're not really used to seeing pitchers going, you know, as early as on and often as they're going this year. But I just think having one of those, like, you know, top 10 guys or maybe even 2 of them just sets you apart and really it's all relative, right? Like what are you getting out of your starting pitchers and out of your hitters in relative spots? So I just think like getting those starting pitchers that could set you apart in the ratios and the volume early on, you know, because it drops off pretty, you know, there's a lot of question marks. It really drops off after, you know, the first few rounds. So just to me, I mean, ratios, pitching ratios are some of the hardest stats to make up throughout the season, right? So if you can, you know, set yourself up with an ace or two at the top of the draft and go from there, I mean, I can make up hitting categories, right, throughout the draft. And really, like, I've identified this season just because the draft boards are just all over the place, right? Because you got 2019, right? You got people taking stock in 2019. There's some guys that, you know, you're not sure if you can buy, you know, they're 2020. So, you know, you got all kinds of value throughout the draft. And for me, I think I see a lot of value in hitting going later, right? So it's all relative. And for me, I like the hitting going later in drafts, in the middle rounds. And so, yeah, I think those early pitchers can really set you apart. So for me, that's the way I've been going this season.
You mentioned pitching going early and it's all relative. People like to be like, well, I'm going to zig when everyone's zagging. That might not work for you because if pitching goes early, all it's going to do is continue to push pitching up. So if you continue to think, oh, pitching's still going too early, next thing you know, you can have a guy outside the top 25 as your ace, and you will find an ace or two there this season, but you're banking on finding it, period, if you go that route. And it's one of those things that like, well, I'm zigging, everyone's zagging, but you probably shouldn't do that for too long because it's going to put you in a deficit. Like you mentioned, if everyone else is attacking pitching, when you need pitching, it's going to be bare, but hitting will be plentiful. So although yeah. I like to zig when people zag sometimes, this is the year I feel like I'm less inclined to do so because I just feel so much more confident in the pitching at the top. And it should, I don't know, man. I'm just frustrated because I'm not huge on pocket aces. I wanted to bring that up because pocket aces is a very, very, you know, popular strategy this year, especially after the success we saw players have with it last year. You know, Toby Bat for Crazy made it huge, made it like a big thing last year. And it's something that's been going on a long time, but, you know, getting the term behind it really helped it stick. And I'm not against it. I've done it before, but I like getting two pitchers in my first three rounds. So what I like to do is pitcher, hitter, pitcher usually, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm more comfortable, or like you said, if I have to say I have a back end of the first round pick, I go pitcher, hitter, then I'll go hitter, pitcher because those fourth round pitchers, I do like a lot of them, and I'm okay with a lot of them being SP2s. And we'll talk about them because I mean it's like the Lance Lynn types, and even Plesac, who I'm not a huge fan of, Burns. There's enough upside there to take as my SP2 as long as I have an ace to pair him with. I hate taking those guys as my SP1 though, because again, a lot of those guys are unproven outside of one great year. And even then it's a great stretch and we're calling it a year because of the shortened season. So yeah, that's where I'm at with early round pitching. And when we're talking about early rounds, we're talking about how we set the foundation for our teams, but that's Roto. Now we're going to let's take Roto, and you and I play in deeper formats sometimes. Actually, let me ask you this before we transition to shallower formats. When's the earliest in a 15-teamer or whatever that you'll take, or even, it doesn't matter, I guess, when's the earliest you'll take a pitcher? Are you a guy that's willing to take one as early as one overall, even, depending on the format?
Yeah, absolutely. In a 15-teamer, if I'm picking in the first, like, four or five picks, I have no problem taking...
I meant first overall pick.
Oh, first overall pick? I mean, yeah, you can make an argument for one of those aces as asking. First overall. I think so. And it really comes down to a roster construction standpoint, right? Like you have to, when I'm drafting,
like, do you feel like comfortable with Gallen or Flaherty as your ace? Cause that's who's most likely going to fall to you in the second, third round. And it's a matter of your level of comfort with those guys, or if you like those guys or Kershaw or whatever, whoever's there at the turn, you have to know who's likely going to fall. So that plays into your level of comfort and who you want to take first overall. Sorry, as you were.
So, you know, wherever you pick in the draft, you kind of know, like, at least in the first three, four rounds, like, what's going to be there for you, what kind of lineup construction you're going to be able to build. And so, like, if I'm picking first overall, I have no problem taking Garrett Cole or DeGrom. And just because, like, you know that, like, rounds two or three, there's going to be hitters there that you like, right? There might be, like, I like to get one of those top, like, nine shortstops. Eight or nine shortstops at the top of the draft, just because I think it falls off really quickly. So if I'm picking in the first half of the first round, like in a 15-teamer, and I want to get one of those aces like a DeGrom or a Cole, I know that maybe in the third round I can get a Tim Anderson, who's a solid five category producer, right? If I'm picking at the end of the first round, Tim Anderson's not going to fall to me in that third round. He's not going to fall to the back of the third round. So I know that I can go pitcher like a Giolito and take my shortstop in the second round. And then maybe there's a guy like a couple guys I like Corbin Burns or
it's always hard to think of those names.
Zach Gallen. Yeah. Maybe a Zach Gallen is there for me at the end of a third round.
Lucky. The problem is you're typically stuck taking risks like Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Kenta Maeda, who might not be as much of a risk. I think there is a little bit there because he's never really had to pitch a full season because the Dodgers dodgered him. So there is risk there. For me, Lance Lynn's the guy I typically would target there, or Crasco even.
But you can even get them in the fourth round. If you're picking at the end of a first round, you can even get that your second pitcher in the fourth round because you're coming around on the turn. So say you start like a Giolito, you get your shortstop. Like I typically like to get my shortstop if I'm picking the end of the first, like in the second, whether that's like a Lindor or Bichette, someone like that. And then maybe like a Anthony Rendon, one of those type of Eloy Jimenez at the end of the third round. And then you can come back in the fourth with your second starter in someone like, you know, we mentioned Lance Lynn, Corbin Burns. So really like wherever you pick in the first round, you kind of know, you kind of have an idea what kind of foundation you're going to be able to set for your team.
And when we transition to shallower formats, 10 and 12 team, again, sticking with Roto, I think starting pitcher falls more, you know, you're able to get more because that's, what is that? Six less picks you have to worry about being taken before you get back if you pick early in the first. So I'm more willing to take a stud hitter there because I know, or at least I feel very confident in being able to get maybe a Castillo to fall to late second or a Woodruff or even both of them. So I want to get that elite hitter early in the first rounds of a shallower format, 10 and 12 team league, knowing good and well I'll be able to get my ace in the second more than likely. And if I'm on the back end of a shallower format, again, 10 or 12 team league, I'm definitely going to grab my ace there I'm 100% grabbing a hitter. I'm not going pocket aces in a shallow format because I think pitching will fall more. And I want to make sure I get one of those. I'll be able to get a stud hitter and an ace at the back end of a first round of those shallow formats. Do you agree with that? Or do you have something different that you would attack those drafts with?
No, I'm right there with you. And it's basically how my drafts have played out this year in 12 versus 15, just because, I mean, there's three extra teams in a 15 team or so. The pitching really falls off at a certain point. And in a 12 team, I mean,
you get value.
You can get a Zach Gallen in the fourth round, or, you know, there's times where maybe a Brandon Woodruff will fall into the third round, or a Jack Flaherty. So yeah, like I completely agree. In a 12 teamer, it's definitely for me, easier to take like a hitter with my first like two picks, and then just because you have more options, more opportunities later on to get more.
Probably, pitching. I was gonna say you probably don't even need to take a pitcher in the first two rounds if you, depending on where you pick and what's there. Like you can start off with like an Acuna or Soto in the first because nobody wants to take Trout in the top three. You can start with one of those two guys in the first. Pair that with a Bogarts, the guy I used to like before the injury issues. But pair that with a Machado in the second, and then early in the third, you're probably going to end up with a really solid ace-like pitcher. But for me personally, I would personally take the pitcher in the second, and then take whichever hitter falls to the third. That's just me. Yeah. Or maybe I would even go hitter, pitcher, and then just smash hitting away from all the way down from there. Because again, the level of ace you could get at the back end of the first, or back end of the second, early third, you might be able to get a Castillo Flaherty combo or Castillo Woodruff, like. I keep saying Castillo because Castillo's ADP is 26. So if you're playing in a 10-team league, that's definitely going to happen. But in a 12-team league, he should be there for you as well. So if you're looking at Luis Castillo, I view him as an ace, fantasy ace. You could pair him. And if you want to take a bit of a risk, Castillo should get you the innings, should get you the ratio, should get you everything you need. You can take a shot. And I'm always more willing to take risk in shallow formats because replacement value is usually better off the waiver wire. So I might pair Castillo with a Kershaw or a Scherzer, where normally I would be risk adverse and not take them. In a shallow format, I'm willing to give them a shot because we know what the upside is. We know what the track record is, but the health can be an issue. And typically, again, I'm fading Scherzer and Kershaw in deeper formats, whereas in a shallow format, I might pair them. I might take them because I'm able to pair them with a safer option ahead of them. Or no, I can, again, I'll be getting good depth at pitcher given the format.
Right. So, yeah, the replacement level is just better in a 12-teamer. And I definitely love picking like at the top of the draft in a 12 teamer. You start off with, you could start off with like a Tatis or an Acuna, and then you come back around and double tap pitching with the Castillo and Woodruff. I mean, that's an amazing start. Yeah. You know, so
I just love how you and I are on the same page with the same pitchers, like Castillo and Woodruff. We're skipping over Scherzer, Flaherty, and Kershaw. And
this goes to show you just how much we've been drafting already this season. Yeah. We kind of know like what's there and stuff,
and who we want. That's the thing, is who we want. Yeah. But are you more willing? Yeah. Let's talk risk management. And a lot of people, because risk is kind of not spoken about in shallower formats. And again, I'm guilty because I just mentioned I'll not necessarily ignore it, but take my shots earlier than I typically would in a deeper format. So in a 10 or 12, would you be more willing to take some risks here and give Scherzer or Kershaw a shot? Maybe not over Woodruff, because that's a bad example, because we both just really like Woodruff, but maybe over a Gallen or a Flaherty, who have their own question marks in terms of legitimacy.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think you have a good argument there for, you know, taking on a little more risk in a shallower format where, you know, like I mentioned, the replacement level is just much better. Yeah, in a 10 or 12 team.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, I know I'm more willing to take on the risk, because risk management is something, like, I think you need to be more risk adverse earlier in deeper formats. It makes sense. You know, you do the math, players available, all that good stuff. Points leagues, I think we are always going to say just take every pitcher every round ever. Because in a points league, let's look at this. A typical points league roster, three outfielders, well, for a catcher first, second, third, short, no middle, no corner, and only, like I said, only three outfielders, one utility. So the offense is very shallow, but you still have what, nine pitcher slots, or is it six with like four, two, and then like three? I don't know how it was. I think it's still nine. So right then and there, you realize pitching is still as deep as as needed as ever, and pitchers can score the most points. So like, I know I'm taking, like, I'm probably gonna go, like, I would even take one of the big three first three overall, probably give me one of those three pitchers top three and kind of go from there, because I just want all the pitching I can get, because hitting should fall. And even if hitting doesn't fall, you're gonna get good values because people are gonna fill out their offense early in drafts. So I definitely want to take pitching early and often in points leagues. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, no, I agree. In points leagues and head-to-head points, I definitely like loading up on pitching, because, I mean, that is going to carry you to the playoffs. Having a deep, having a roster deep in pitching, I mean, in a points league, you're pretty much guaranteed yourself, you know, like a top half finish and into the playoffs, because those two start weeks, the more good pitchers you have pitching two starts for you on a consistent basis, like, you're just going to ride that into the playoffs.
Yeah, and last format I want to discuss is quality start leagues. That's like a thing that I think we're seeing die off because of just how the pitchers don't pitch deep into games. But I think we're going to agree on this one in terms of just value those aces, because I think especially in 2021, quality starts are going to be way harder to come by. You need a guy that you can go deeper into games, I should say.
I mean, we thought wins were a fickle stat. I mean, you know, like, that was the whole reason why quality starts were becoming more and more popular. But I mean, how much longer are we going to see guys like continuing to put up quality starts? I mean, unless, you know, they're the best pitchers. I mean, yeah, we're seeing bullpens, you know, coming out earlier, and yeah, quality start leagues. I don't want to play in any more quality start leagues these days.
I just don't know what do we play anymore? If we don't play quality start leagues, then what do we play anymore? I don't know what to do. I guess you should just stick with wins. But if we're going to play quality short leagues again, just target aces early, because it's harder to come by. But guys like Kyle Hendricks, guys like Keuchel, Civale, insert Indians pitcher here. You know, those are guys that are probably going to pitch deep into games. Target Stroman, ground ball pitchers, guys that pitch to contact a little more than swings and misses, because although you might lose out in K's, if you like, maybe you could build your K's earlier or with good relief pitching, and then that way you can target guys that you know are going to probably pitch deeper into games later, like the names I mentioned. Those are the ones that come to mind right away in terms of like guys in the middle rounds, which we're not talking middle rounds, but guys that can help you gain some of those quality starts that you might be seeking later into the player pool. But
yeah,
now that we talked about strategy, I feel like we talked about the guys we're targeting in the first couple rounds, but you and I both mentioned, I actually was in a high stakes league myself. It was a tag team league. And my partner and I, Zach, you know, Zach, from the Draft Champagne Pod, we took Gerrit Cole third overall. So obviously I am all about pitching early. And I'm not necessarily targeting one of the top three, but if one falls to me, I'm good with it. Do you have a preference? Like, who's your number one? Actually, you know what? Rank all three. I'm going to make it hard on you. Nobody wants to talk about it, but let's rank all three. Who are you taking and what's going on here?
Ah, man. So, look, there's no doubt that Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher on the planet. Yeah, yes. The dude is just ridiculous. But for me, I'm probably have Garrett Cole rostered on more of my teams, just because, I mean, splitting hairs here. Because I do play a lot of deeper leagues, I want, you know, the least amount of risk possible. And, you know, DeGrom, there's really not much risk as far as, like, the skills go. But he's had just a few, you know, ticky-tack injuries over the last couple seasons that you don't know. Like, I mean, at age 32, can they start to, you know, build up a bit? And if we're talking, you know, no doubt that, you know, whatever innings DeGrom pitches, they're going to be elite. But if there's a chance that maybe he gets 20 to 30 fewer innings than Garrett Cole, then, I mean, for me, it's just in the first round, you can't go wrong. And so I'm going to take the least amount of risk, right?
Yeah, I'm with you with the Cole, DeGrom, Bieber. That's just how I rank it. And I just, anybody wants to take DeGrom first, I get it. The dude's pumping like 99 already. So
yeah.
I totally get it. And maybe I would diversify. I wouldn't just commit to one single like player. Like, oh, I got to have this guy first. You want to diversify because if one does get hurt, one does bust a little bit, then all your teams have the same player. So I'm big on diversifying. So if you play in multiple leagues, maybe in 2/3 of your leagues, like if say you play 3 leagues, maybe 2 of them you target Cole first. And if you have the chance and you want to keep going pitcher first round, you take the Grom in one, hedge your bets, so to speak. That's kind of something exactly, else I can do. I think diversifying is a good thing to do in fantasy. Cause you don't, I mean, unless you, again, I don't want to play for you either. If you want to play just to have fun, get your guys, dude, do that. I'm all about having fun. Fantasy is supposed to be fun. It's become such a game of like everyone's focused on profits. And I get it. I'm guilty of it. I'm very competitive, but I also play for money. But some people just want to play for fun. Some people are playing in home leagues, long-time home leagues for free. Get your guy. Have fun. That's also part of the game. We don't preach that enough because we're so taught to focus on value, focus on winning. Also, having fun is part of it. So I don't want to take that away from anybody who's listening that's like, I just play for fun. Keep doing that. We don't want to lose you as a listener. We don't want to lose you in the community. So I want to preach that for a second there. And yeah, we can move on. So anyway, back to where I was trying to get to, early round targets. I want to just kind of give a couple names each. We mentioned, I think we agree, we talked about the top three as a whole, but where are you at after that? Like, if you had your choice after the top three, are you a Bauer guy, a Darvish guy, or are you going straight to Giolito, Bueller? I want to hear your thoughts.
Oh, man. I like all of them. It really, like, it like I mentioned before, it kind of depends on, like, your draft slot and what's there for you. But, you know, I have no problem taking a lot of these guys. Giolito might be my personal favorite. As the number four pitcher, really like Giolito, where he's going, you know, back to back, really, really good seasons. The swing and strike rate is just ridiculous, off the charts. I mean, it was 17% last year, but a lot of these guys are similar, right? Like Giolito, Aaron Nola, Trevor Bauer, even like Luis Castillo, like they can all have really, really good seasons. I'm pretty confident in each of them. And so it's one of those things where, yeah, like maybe in one draft I'll take Aaron Nola, and then the next, if I'm in the same spot with the same decision, I'll take Luis Castillo. Like, for me, like, you really can't go wrong. My favorite would probably right now would be Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, I'm actually with you. I hate to agree because it makes for boring content, but I'm with you on Giolito. And, you know, he improved while changing some stuff up. You know, he actually threw more changeups last year, a little less fastballs. The changeup was crazy good. The fact is just he has a 3-pitch mix that works really well for him. The slider's really good as well. The fastball plays up, and it is what it is. I mean, what are you going to do? Giolito's a stud. And the division is easy too. He gets a pretty good division. That's kind of like a difference maker for me, or a tiebreaker, so to speak. Aaron Nola and Castillo and Luis Castillo are guys I also target in that range where if Giolito's gone, because by the time, if I'm picking the back end of the first round, I'll take my hitter and hope to land one of those two. Because I usually let other people take the quote-unquote risks here. Trevor Bauer, Yu Darvish, and Bueller aren't guys I'm necessarily out on. They're just guys I'm not as high on as others. Darvish is super intriguing. He's talking about how his stuff's the best it's ever been. He's like, I can keep, because, you know, he has like 15 pitches in his arsenal. I think he legitimately has 10 or 12, actually. but he throws, you know, so many pitches and he throws them effectively. And he's like, hitters just assume off speed's coming. So I throw fastballs and keeps them off guard. And I'm like, dude, how do you prep for a guy like Darvish? As long as he's not, the thing is though, is he had that, what, the Tommy John and a few other things linger over the last few years. So ever since getting the control under control, for lack of a better term, he's been such a stud. So I think I'm afraid of the age a little bit. There's a little ageism going on for me there, but I recognize how good he is. So it's one of those, like, going back to risk being risk adverse, I want Trevor Bauer and Yu Darvish. I feel they're a little risky because Bauer, we've seen the roller coaster, the ups and downs. We saw fantastic 2019 was kind of like whatever, and 2020 was again best year of his career probably. Small sample, increases spin efficiency on his pitches. A lot of suggestion as to how that happened. So I'm willing to take a shot on Bauer and Darvish, but again, that goes back to taking risk in shallow formats. I'll take them in shallow formats, whereas I think Giolito's a little safer. Aaron Nola and Castillo are definitely safer for innings, especially over guys over like a Buehler, which I want to talk about Buehler for a moment here, but I don't want to, and I think you want to say something, so I don't want to keep talking. I want to give you a chance to rebuttal or discuss this a little bit.
Oh, no, I was just, you know, just in this, yeah, no, in this range here, I agree with you. Like Bauer, Darvish, and Buehler are the three guys who, like, I'm probably going to have the least of. Now, with Bauer, I think regression is definitely going to come. I think he definitely way overperformed his strikeout rate, jumped up from 27% to 36%, despite the swing and strike rate pretty much remaining consistent from 2019 to 2020. So I think there's definitely some regression coming. I do like that he's on probably the best team. So, you know, wins are going to be there. You know, he's going to pitch deep into games. But I do think there's going to be some regression. How much? I'm not sure. Sometimes these things overcorrect. I would take him just because I know the innings are going to be there. And like you said, there might be a little ageism. Yeah, I would have him over Darvish and Buehler for me. Darvish, entering his age 35 season, right? Yeah, he'll be 35 in August. Has a little bit of that injury history. He's been just lights out since 2019, the second half of 2019. He's basically just been right up there with, like, you know, the top pitchers in the game. So
he was that good before Tommy John. He was like one of those guys that over for the Rangers that was just so damn good. Like Darvish was lights out as a Ranger. I remember I was drafting. We got a late start in our home league. It was like an 8-team league at a bar. This is how I started playing fantasy. And we're at a bar watching this game. And he was one out away from a no hitter or a perfect game. I think it was no hitter. And it was like a shot. It was like a little crappy hit up the middle or something. And I think he had Tommy John shortly after that, like next start or something like that. And that was the year, man. And I'm like, oh, so Darvish got picked like really early, obviously, because we're watching it. And man, I remember how good he was. He stumbled out the gates after coming back from TJ, turned around, and he's been kind of who we expect. The only problem is what is he, 33, 34 years old? That's the problem, or 35 even. He's older, and people are just holding that against him when he's done nothing but show us that he's not only been healthy lately, but been damn near best pitcher in baseball. That's why I don't understand why there's so much ageism there, and I'm guilty of it. Like, I'm just as guilty. That's why
I plan on, by the way, I know
we talked about doing one draft together, but I'm doing two more. And I think I want to get Darvish on one team. He's 34 years old, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I already joined another one, and I'm still going to do one with you. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
Got the fever. Dude, draft champions are so much fun. I enjoy them. They're easy to manage, too. Well, I have a home league coming up. It's a 12-team auction. So that's I usually do two or three home auctions a year, but I think we're only doing one this year. We lost a lot of our usual people after everything. But I'm excited because in an auction league, I can control my destiny. But here's the thing. Talking about strategy here, auction leagues, I don't go in with set dollar values like a lot of people do. I tend to watch how the draft unfolds. And I keep my tier-based rankings with me, or tier-based. Like, I have an idea of who I rank relatively similarly, and I have an idea of what value I would give them. And then I take the cheapest in that bucket, regardless. I set my team up with the high-end guys because I want, like, if, for instance, DeGrom, Cole, and Bieber, I keep those three together, right, in my head. Knowing probably more than likely Bieber's going to be the cheapest. If I really want one of those guys, Bieber's going to be my target, knowing I expect similar production, but for the cheapest price. So then now group the next group together. I know I'm higher on Luis Castillo than most people. So even in an auction, even though I want Darvish, I'm probably going to end up with Luis Castillo or Aaron Nola because that's probably going to be the cheapest of that tier. So you just got to know how to go into your again, it's all about understanding how your auctions usually run. Everyone's auctions are different. I've just noticed that this specific format, the way I do things, works for me in auctions. But getting back on track, I'm going to probably do two more draft champions, and Darvish is on my list of a guy I just want to leave. I want to leave one draft with this year. Just something scares. Like I have FOMO with Darvish. I have some FOMO there.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just hard though. Where he goes, there's always somebody higher on him than us.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look at his numbers, I mean, he was an absolute ace last year, right? But
yeah,
the last time he was a true like fantasy ace was maybe, you know, 2017. He put up 186 innings, 3.86 ERA, and then before that, it was 2013 since he put up the innings and the you know, the ERA, 209 innings and 2.83 ERA.
Him, all right, I need my this one is share.
2013. So I mean, yeah, he might just be a little more volatile than we think, but he's definitely been lights out since that second half of 2019. He's just, for me, yeah, he's just one of these guys at the top where, like I said, when you're picking at the top of the draft, right, especially in a deeper league, you're not looking for ways these guys can win you your league, right? There's a reason they're going in the top two rounds. You're looking for, really, you're looking for ways they can lose you your league. And so if there's different paths of, you know, different ways that a certain pitcher, if a certain pitcher has multiple ways that he can lose me my league or you know, not give me that first, second round value, then, you know, I'm probably going with a little safer guy. And so that's really just why I've kind of just been fading Darvish at the top of the draft.
I don't want to, I want my one share. Stop. But yeah, I'm going to take my shot. I think I want to do a team that's a little risky. I don't want to go, because if I, you know, drafting three or four draft champions, it's easy to stay very similar in your draft, like the way you draft things. I want to change things up on one. Remember, I talk about diversifying. I have a chance to diversify and make one team that's a little riskier than the rest, just kind of like a go for the overall type of team. And I'm not saying super risky. Like, I'm not going to touch Mondesi no matter what. It's just not for me. I never will. I can't. I'm staying on brand. My brand is fading Mondesi no matter how wrong he makes me. But I'm just, yeah, like that's the type of thing. So I think I'm like willing, I want to take a shot on Darvish. But yeah, I usually end up with so much Nolan Castillo. That's a problem. Nolan Castillo or a first round pitcher, like a high end pitcher in the first round. That's been what I've been getting. Even in TGFBI, same thing. I end up with a Castillo and then Gallen fell to the third. So I doubled up on Castillo and Gallen. Like that's just, it just seems to be what I fall into, especially if I get my KDS choice, which is like 6 to 8. So between 6 and 8, I like drafting in this year. Yeah. Whereas normally I like the ends, but this year I like the middle. Anyway, back to these pitchers. Is there any, well, because we're trying to focus on like early round pitching and we're kind of just nailing that home. Are there any guys in the top 10 to 15 that you're fading, or did we mention them in Scherzer and Kershaw because of injury risk compared to the other guys around them type of thing?
Yeah. So like I mentioned being a little lower on Buehler, and really that's just from like a workload inning standpoint. If I can get him as my second pitcher, then I feel a little more comfortable with that. But yeah, and then Darvish and Scherzer. We've seen Scherzer again, also getting up there in age. I think he'll be what, 37, or he is 37. He's 30. So he will be 37. Just a few little injuries coming up here and there for him. I mean, the velocity is still good. A lot, much of the skills are still there for Scherzer. He has been getting hit a little hard recently. There's a slight trend in that direction. But yeah, again, this is just, he's one where I see, you know, whether it's skill decline or health, there's, you know, a couple different paths to him not providing value. And so if I'm taking him as my first pitcher, then again, I'm just trying to go with a little more safer profile.
I completely agree. And that's why I'm kind of fading some of these guys as well. But Buehler, okay, so I think we're going to agree here. If we had to pick one guy inside the top 10 to finish outside the top 10, is it Walker Buehler for you?
I believe in the skills. I think in the top 10 to finish outside, like for me, it would be like, maybe it is Scherzer, right? I mean, he is going to be 37. Maybe it is an injury that happens. And then, you know, you next season, we're going to be looking at him as a soon to be 38 year old pitcher. And so then can he see that fall back into, you know, outside the top 25. As far as like from a skill standpoint, I don't really see all that much from any of these guys that would make me believe like, no, they're going to pitch all year, but they're going to be a complete bust, right? Like it's hard for me to call like one of those. I think if anyone falls out, it's going to be, yeah, like maybe like a Max Scherzer.
Yeah, that makes the most sense. I'm going to be a little controversial because I think the way I worded it was falling outside the top 10. I meant top 10, a top 10 guy who could fall outside the top 25. Because for me, for you, for us to be like, yeah, Max Scherzer could fall outside the top 10 because he's going right at 10. I meant to word it differently. So that's your pick that probably most likely is there. And I agree. It's not about skill set. And my guy is Walker Buehler. And what scares me about Walker Buehler and saying he's going to fall outside the top 25 is really bold. So I want to kind of hedge and say he's just not going to live up to expectations as a top 10 pick. So I'm, like I said, I'm hedging my bet. I'm cheating on my own game here. Because I think Scherzer is the obvious pick inside the top 10. So I'm going to be a little different here. I'm going to go Walker Buehler. And it's not because I don't believe in Buehler's skill set. We saw him in the playoffs. It was like Mad Bum-esque in terms of just being so fantastic in the playoffs, being a young, fantastic pitcher that just shined. And the problem is here is I want to just fade him because not only do I think the Dodgers are going to be the Dodgers and limit him, they're going to, you know, mix in Dodgeritis days, as we call them these days, with him just getting phantom IL stints and skip days. Maybe they go to six-man rotation because they have the depth to do so. But then you have Buehler that, remember, he came out last year and just was self-admittedly a slow starter, he said. He says he starts off the year slow. So if you're pairing a slow starter with a guy who could probably run into innings restrictions because they're going to probably go, you know, there's I don't see how the Dodgers don't make the playoffs. So you pair innings restrictions with a slow start and the potential just for the Dodgers to toy around and be the Dodgers. I think there's risk there that can push him just because of all those factors, push him outside the top 10 for sure. And not that I don't believe, again, I want to stress, I believe in Buehler being fantastic. I think he's a future ace. He's probably this year I'm sitting here saying he could fall outside the top 15 or whatever, but he's the guy that I think can be the best overall pitcher in a year or two as well. So as soon as next year, I can be ranking him number one and I wouldn't be surprised. But I think what it is, I'm more willing to miss out than I am to take the plunge.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I'm at with Buehler.
No, yeah, you make some good points. If we're talking maybe a little bit lower, like outside the top 10, one guy that I am absolutely fading is Tyler Glasnow.
Tyler Glasnow later.
I won't have any. Sorry. There you go. and for me, I mean, it just feels like we're just chasing those 60 innings in the first half of 2019 before he got hurt, right? I mean, it was a 1.78 ERA in that first half of 2019. But since then, he hasn't been near the same pitcher. And for me, there's still, you know, a little bit of injury concern. There's the control, you know, the issues with control. There's the limited pitch mix. Glasnow is someone that I'm fading. I could see him, you know, falling outside like the top 25.
And I think Glasnow is a guy that's commonly chosen. It's like you're either in or you're out. Blake Snell, yeah. I want to be in, but I think there's similar questions in terms of health, longevity. The elbow never really had anything done to it. Remember, Snell had those elbow injuries last year, or it was chips in his elbow or just some soreness. And then just he pitched because the shortened season allowed him to get healthy before pitching for the 60 innings. I think there's a risk there in terms of playing time and in terms of health there. So that's kind of another guy I'm just kind of letting other people take because there's a guy behind him who might not have the ceiling, but somebody I think the floor is there and the innings will be there is not Josh Hader. Wrong person, wrong position. Lance Lynn, starting pitcher. He's a guy that, although I think he could be kind of whatever, I think the innings are going to get him there. I think he's going to be closer to a high 3 ERA than a 4 ERA, but I know some people don't buy that. I just think you know what you're getting. Again, it goes back to that division. The White Sox are a great team to target because they have a great offense, so you know that he's going to get wins. And he gets to face the Royals, who aren't as bad as people might think because on paper, I think they're going to be okay. But then the Tigers are a joke. Who else is in that division I'm blanking on right now? The Royals, the Tigers. Indians aren't as strong. Indians are whatever. And yeah, that's it. And the Twins. The Twins are kind of scary. So that's a 50-50 one there because I know they were really good 2 years ago. Last year, they were like middle of the pack. But still, we're looking at two good matchups, an iffy one, and like two iffy ones. Like really, I want pitchers in that division still. You know what I mean? And if any type of schedule changes happen because of COVID for whatever reason, there's probably going to be a super central again, right? Completely wacky, unthought of thing that no one talks about because I just thought about it on top of my head. Something that's probably not going to happen. I'd give it like a 0.5% chance. But on that 0.5% chance, we see COVID become an issue again, and they go back into super divisions. Guess who gets the benefit from that? The Central again. So that's I mean, you can't put that in your analysis with any actual bit of seriousness. I just thought I'd throw that out there because, like, hey, what if, you know, it popped in my head. It's not going to happen. But if it does,
yeah, and he's one guy for me who gets a big boost in those quality start and points leagues because you know the volume is going to be there. You know he's going to go deep into games. So, like, yeah, I'm way more likely to take Lance Lynn in a quality start at points league.
I have a fun Lynn stat. Let's see if I can find it real quick. I have a really fun Lance Lynn stat. Here it is. So last year, he had two bad starts versus Houston in 2020, but he never gave up more than three runs in any other start outside of those two bad starts. Let's see. So those two bad starts in Houston, right? And you can't just erase starts. Right. But I'm just looking at just again, one team really got the best of them. Six innings pitched, six earned runs in one of the starts. 5.2 innings pitched, nine earned runs in the other start. So again, the team just had his number. But in 72.1 innings otherwise, so every other start of the season, he never gave up more than three runs. So he had a 2 ERA over 72.1 innings outside of playing Houston. Again, one team, which again, now he doesn't have to play that team because he's not in that division. Not only is he moving to the better team, he has the easier division. Grandal is his catcher, and there's zero question marks in terms of health or innings. Mm-hmm. That's really why I'm in on him. Like I said, it's a fun stat because it's like you can't just take starts away from pitchers. But I guess what I was trying to get at is that he was so good against all the other levels of competition outside of one team. Had he had a regular season, those two starts probably wouldn't have messed up the numbers as bad as they did. They would have been outliers. Complete outliers, because obviously he was dominating outside of those two starts.
Yeah, I remember that last start very well.
Yes, yes,
it ruined you a lot of leagues. Yeah,
it ruined you. I remember you. I almost mentioned you, but I wasn't 100% sure. A couple more guys I'm in on because again we're trying to focus on top 25. I love Carlos Carrasco. I can't get enough of him for whatever reason. I just think we saw him healthy last year. He's going to the Mets, who have a better offense, but also have a tougher division. But there's no DH in the NL as well. So there's a little give and take there. I know the health is always a question, but you're getting him at a point where he's your SP2, sometimes SP3. The way we draft, he'd be most likely an SP3 for us. And having him as your SP3 is like that's difference making potentially. There's guys like Sonny Gray around him, which he's actually outside of the top 25, so we can talk about him another time. Actually, no, there's relief pitchers mixed in here. So Sonny Gray is a guy that's like for me, Sonny Gray or Carrasco, and that goes back to team build. Can I take the risk? Did I start with a Cole Gallen and now Carrasco makes sense because I can play for upside? Or did I take a chance on a glass now and decide, you know what, I need to secure things up? Sonny Gray makes more sense. Both of which I favor over Plesac. Do you like, okay, there's like a lot of questions here. What are your thoughts on what I just said in terms of like those players, I guess? And then I want to hear about Plesac. We need to finish talking about the top 25 and we have to talk about Plesac.
For sure.
You have to. Everyone has to.
Yeah, I like Carrasco and Sonny Gray as well. I mean, I think they're guys who, I'm perfectly fine with, like, as my second or third starter. Like, you did mention, like, the way we've been drafting, they're probably, like, our third starter. I mean, that's the way it's played out. I've taken Carrasco, I've taken Sonny Gray, I'm in on Plesac, you know, because in a year where... like there's going to be so much uncertainty as far as volume and innings and stuff. I think he's someone we've seen, you know, Terry Francona pushes his pitchers deep into games. I think the innings will be there, and I'm buying the changes that he made last year. Right. So, I mean, we saw, you know, him, you know, have a tangible change. That's one of your things, right? Tangible changes.
I love tangible change.
Yeah. So definitely went off that fastball. Incorporated more of his slider and I'm buying it, you know, a 14.3% swinging strike rate. He's got the control. He's going to go deep into games. I like Plesac. I'm in on him. I've taken him as in some leagues as my SP2 and, you know, he's someone that, I mean, you're going to see Plesac go like in the fourth round of a 15 teamer or maybe in the seventh round of a 15 teamer, you know, he's going to go anywhere.
I wish he'd go that far. Where are those drafters in my leagues? Because even I'll take Plesac in the fourth, because usually by then I have two and I'm willing to take a third starting pitcher there. And I actually, like, I have Plesac. I have one share and it's in a 12-team league with quality starts because I like to target Indians pitchers with quality starts leagues. But I also started that league with Bieber Woodruff combo. So if you go Bieber Woodruff and then I can get Plesac as my three, I'll do that all day. I also have Savale as my four, by the way, because it's a quality starts league, and Alcantara. So I made sure I got quality starts. Alcantara, we don't talk. No one talks about him enough. quality starts, I think he's a guy that can pitch deep into games. Not going to get you the strikeouts you need, but a guy that can go six. But yeah, that's about it with him. I told you Keuchel. I'm a man of my word. I have Keuchel on this team too. And that's a guy I know. I might need. If I didn't have Plesac, Woodruff, and Bieber, I'd be scared of my strikeouts. But otherwise, I'm good. Anyway.
Yeah. Another guy I really like there in the top 25, Corbin Burnes, man. I'm buying.
So you're buying these guys. You're buying these two
2020 darlings. Yeah, I'm buying them. And
that's dangerous.
I really like Corbin Burnes. Especially now that they've added easy
matchups, by the way. They both had like really great like teams they faced last year. You know what I mean? Great schedules.
Yeah.
They dominate. Now the counter argument is they did dominate those schedules like they were supposed to.
Yeah. I mean, Burnes is someone who like maybe takes a hit in like in a quality start or a points league because he probably won't get too many quality starts. He still does struggle with control, but he's got the deep pitch mix. I love that they added Jackie Bradley Jr. and Colton Wong. And then, you know, NL pitchers get a little boost because of the no DH. So, yeah, Corbin Burnes, I wouldn't mind taking him as my second starter. I'm in.
Mm. Yeah, I can't with confidence. I've taken him as my SP2 because he falls. I think what it is he's actually the end of a tier for me. He's the guy that like I'm not out on, but he has to fall. And usually, like when I took him, it was my SP2. It's because I already had Gerrit Cole, so I paired Gerrit Cole with Corbin Burnes, which made a lot of sense for that team that we were building at the time. Especially because it was the end of the fourth round when we got Burnes, and we didn't want to get burned and miss the. Sorry, couldn't avoid that one. I had to like, oh man, sorry. I really didn't want to get burned though. I didn't want to get burned missing out on a certain tier. And my partner agreed with me, and we took Corbin Burnes there because it just made sense for the team we were building. So he's a guy that I'm not out on. I just don't go out of my way to get him. And Plesac, same thing. Like, whatever. Like, I'm good with him. But the thing is I prefer Sonny Gray and I prefer Carrasco. So I usually don't get Plesac because I'm not as aggressive. There's always somebody higher on in the room than I am on him. But I'm not completely out on him. You're one of them.
For me too, with Burnes and Plesac versus guys like Carrasco and Gray, I think also the health is also just a bit of a factor there too. I mean, you're talking about Burnes and Plesac who really don't have any injury concerns versus guys like Carrasco and Gray who wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they hit the IL once or twice over the season.
Yeah, but what you're giving away in that, you're also gaining in peace of mind in terms of, you know, you have an idea of what production to expect, where these guys feel like more wild cards.
Yeah, like, yeah,
you can have all the confidence in the world in these guys. That's fine, but you can have that confidence, but you're basing it off of a shortened season where if you read through all these articles, all these quotes, you'll see a ton of people just talking about how weird of a season it was, how out of shape they came in. Some of them didn't even think baseball was going to be played. So did the pitchers just take advantage of that because those guys maybe came in shape? Now that we have a full off season with tape being able to be studied and players getting ready to see these pitchers like never like probably like not like 2020 will hitters adjust, will pitchers have to readjust? There's a lot of things here, and that can be said about anybody, but again, this goes back to track record. Sonny Gray, we've seen him do well over a period of time. Carrasco, we've seen him do well over a period of time. It's just a matter of I have to be willing to miss on Plesac and Corbin Burnes, but I have shares, so I'm not avoiding them. I just rarely find myself being the high guy in the room on them. So it's just I have my preferences on. I just prefer proven commodities over guys that are like hot topics, so to speak. That's all it is. It's not like, and I hate it. Again. It's at least we didn't agree though. That's fun. We finally disagree on something. I think
that would be interesting. That would be interesting, like to see, you know, which pairing does better at the end of the season: Burnes, Plesac versus Carrasco and Sonny Gray.
Well, that's the thing, and I would honestly pair one with the other. Like if I got Plesac, I would want Sonny Gray to help back me up. If I got Carrasco, I'm willing to take upside with Burnes. Like if I waited on pitching, I wouldn't. Like, but I understand what you're saying though. It'd be fun to see which pairing does better. But I know me personally, the way I would build is one secure thing, one upside thing. Because if I waited on pitching, I need somebody who I think could be an ace. And that's the thing. It's funny because although I think the floor for Burnes and Plesac is far lower than Carrasco and Gray, I think the ceiling is higher. So I would want one of those. I like pairing ceiling with high floor. If I pass on early pitching. So if you zig when everyone zags, taking two in this area, you might want to take one of the two that like Curlin's side over here is the safe old bets. Georgia's side is take the upside and run, take the young guys. So maybe just take one of each, hedge your bets, and hope you don't pick the wrong one of both. Because watch, someone's like, fine, you know, I like the idea. I'm going to take Carrasco, and I'm going to take Burns. And it's Plesac and Gray that go off while those two just falter. And it's going to – then they guess who gets added. Make sure you add Roto_Nino for that one. but let's finish off here with some Twitter questions. We have three, and then we have one voicemail, which we will play to finish off, which I shouldn't have shown George, but I did. It was fantastic. But let's start here with J-Dub. J-Dub, the gamer on Twitter. Great dude. Long time. And we've known him for a while now. I feel like he's one of our first ever like follows slash listeners, man.
Yeah, J-Dub, yeah. No,
he's been around.
He has, yeah.
Well, here, it's a Giants question. Austin Slater, okay. Will he get playing time? We saw him. We actually saw him, and then he got hurt and hasn't played since. What are your thoughts on Austin Slater?
So he's going to play, but he's going to be on that weak side of the platoon against lefties. You know, Gabe Kapler likes to play the matchups, and I think we're going to see Alex Dickerson there in left field against righties, and then Austin Slater in against lefties. Slater, now he's put up strong like hard hit rates and good barrel rates over the last two seasons, but he's hit lefties much better than righties. Hit 316 against lefties last year, 255 against righties. So, I mean, unless there's an injury or the NL does incorporate the DH, I don't see him playing very much as things stand against right-handed pitchers. But he'll be in there every day against lefties. So, you know, I'm probably better in like a daily lineups league where you could put him in and then bench him when he's not in against righties.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to be able to play in a daily league for him. But Slater's a guy that we did see start getting playing time against righties before he got hurt last year. But now he's already dealing with an injury in spring training, so now there's injury concerns. Slater's a guy who actually did have some mechanical adjustments. With it came an increase in launch angle like never seen before, which increased, again, the barrel rate and all the other stuff you mentioned. So there was tangible change. There it is. There was tangible change in Austin Slater's game last year. And there's a power speed aspect that just makes him so intriguing. But until he earns playing time against righties, there's not enough playing time there for me to be interested outside of daily transaction leagues where you can slot them in and pair them with maybe, I can't think of a strong, maybe a Renfro. If Renfro is like a strong side of the platoon guy, which I think Renfro hits lefties better, actually, if I think about it. So that's a bad example. But like a Mitch Moreland, if like you have a deep enough league where you have Mitch Moreland who's going to hit just about every day against righties and Slater who should play against lefties, the two of them, that's Frankensteining a really good player probably. So he will play. Just how much? TBD, man. Fantasy Baseball Central on Twitter asks, head-to-head points leagues or head-to-head points dynasty league, Alex Verdugo or Kyle Lewis? I know my answer. I'll let you go first.
Oh, man. I like Verdugo. I like Verdugo hitting at the top of the lineup. You know, good contact, you know, 300 type of hitter. Think he's, you know, hits a lot of doubles too. I like Verdugo.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on Verdugo. And it's like, well, Kyle Lewis just won the Rookie of the Year. Kyle Lewis did that while striking out 30% of the time, basically. So that's why it's like in points leagues, you get negative points for strikeouts usually. Now, if it's one of those points leagues that don't give you negatives for strikeouts, I'll probably take the upside there in Lewis because I think Verdugo is very safe. But strikeouts are a huge problem for him. But then on top of that, he walks a good amount, I think, a decent amount. I don't know. I think I'd still take Verdugo both ways, honestly. I think Verdugo is just better in points. The skill set plays better to that. Maybe the ceiling's not as high, but the floor is far higher. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I don't think – right, yeah. And because of Kyle Lewis's strikeout rate, I think we've seen it last year. He's going to be volatile, you know, from week to week. He's going to go through hot stretches. So, like, in a head-to-head league, yeah, I definitely think, like, Verdugo is going to be more consistent on a you know, week-to-week basis.
And the final question, Twitter question, I should say, is from Lion Lenny. Thoughts on Lewis Brinson? The dude just like crushes spring training, but other than that, man, I don't know. I don't have much to say about him. He just crushes.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Just so you know, like in spring training, he has a 956 OPS with a 353 OBP and a 308 batting average with 14 spring training home runs in his career. Where is that talent when it matters? That is like amazing. Although he almost has like barely a 50% success rate on stolen bases, but he still stole four bases. Like if you gave me 14-4 with a 308 batting average in a regular season from Lewis Brinson, I'd be really happy. The problem is you don't get half of that in a regular season from Lewis Brinson. And the Marlins are loaded with like Monty Harrison coming up and they have JJ Blade on the way and other guys that just fill in the blank. Like I just don't see the playing time there. So if I just I'm not optimistic at this point about Lewis Brinson. What do you think? Do you have anything else to add to that? Just whatever.
Yeah, pretty much, man. I mean, you're our resident Marlins fan. I mean,
you, yeah, and you I'm kinda... just deflated.
Right. Yeah, I have no idea. Is he going to play? Upsetting. Is he going to make the team? I just...
Oh, he'll probably make the team, but he'll probably end up platooning, and it's... There's just so many moving parts there. I think he will make the team. Probably he'll get one last chance to really show, because I feel like every year we see like glimpses and then he just falls off. Maybe he can put it together, but not going to hold my breath, because he does, again, spring training, he's known for his spring training stats at this point. It's just, it doesn't transition or translate over to the majors. So Brinson's a guy that outside the deepest of formats, I'm just ignoring him, because, or if you really feel the need to put him on your watch list, but he's just another guy that, like, that's why, like, he was a top prospect. And this is why sometimes prospects are worth the most in fantasy and dynasty leagues as prospects, because right now you couldn't trade Brinson for a half-eaten sandwich.
No.
And that's unfortunate. So the final question is a voicemail. So we're going to play that voicemail right now. And it is fantastic.
It's your boy, Macho Man. It's coming from the pie in the sky. Which Boston pitcher do you think will have a better year? Richards or Eovaldi? Oh yeah!
Gosh, I love it so much.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. Oh, I've smiled. The first time I heard it, I laughed out loud. And then ever since then, I've listened to it a couple times. It legitimately makes me smile every time. And that is why we push so hard for you to give us your voicemails, because we love this and we think it's a lot of fun. But anyway, let's answer the question. He wants to know. Oh wait, what was the question again? which pitcher has a better year? Which Boston pitcher has a better year? Eovaldi or Garrett Richards? I'm gonna go with Eovaldi, man. The velo's there, the upside's there. Mm-hmm. Richards can't stay healthy. Either can Eovaldi, but I lean Eovaldi ever so slightly because I think they are somewhat similar. What are you? Do you have any thoughts on this one? Maybe a little more deeper than me.
No, I'm right there with you. I would take boring. I like Eovaldi over Richards for sure.
It's just. We're at the hour mark, so I didn't want to run too long over that. So I appreciate it, George. We did it. That's gonna do it, man. Appreciate you joining me. Of course, you can follow George on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Kurland. Check out the Bases Loaded podcast, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it. We're there. Hit us with a 5-star rating review on your way out. Of course, just stick with us throughout the season. We're gonna try to come with 2 episodes a week. Things get in the way, but we do what we can, at least 1 a week for sure. And as always, we appreciate listening, and we'll talk to you soon.